We start the Wintrust Business Lunch on most Mondays with Elise Glink from ThinkLink Media. Hi, Elise. Welcome back.
Hey, nice to be here.
Can I do a postscript to what I was talking about before the news?
Absolutely.
I watched The Pit and I said, I think they overwrite the volume of patients coming in. The waiting room is just like wall-to-wall zoo and it's crazy. And I really love the show, but I think that's a little ridiculous. I've since heard from our listeners. Hey, John, I work in a large Chicago hospital. Our emergency room is consistently extremely full. Violence in healthcare settings is also on the rise. It's getting harder and harder for people to find primary care physicians, and even those who have one often can't get an appointment when acutely ill. 630, I used to work the ER at Northwestern. It's just as busy on the TV show The Pit. Had to move departments because of the stress. Somebody else said, I work in ER, not an immediate care office. We are always crazy busy, especially on weekends. John, we love The Pit because it's realistic, not a bunch of romance. Go to a county hospital, and it's super busy. And the hospitals, I've been to 3 emergency rooms in the last few years, not necessarily for me, and they were downtown Chicago at Northwestern. One was in Joliet, and one was in the Plainfield, Bolingbrook area. And I did not see that kind of traffic, but then again, that's not Cook County. John, I beg to differ with you about emergency rooms. My late husband had to be transferred to Northwestern's emergency room Wednesday night, January of 2023. The emergency room was wall-to-wall people. I don't know how the hospital staff handles the sheer volume, and yet he received excellent care despite how incredibly busy they were. I don't think The Pit is misrepresenting the craziness of the ER. I'm going to ask Dr. Copen about that when we visit with him Tuesday in the 1 o'clock hour from Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. Okay, so let's call this segment Death and Taxes, because you want to talk a little bit about taxes, right?
We do. I mean, tomorrow is the day, unless you filed an extension. But for hopefully for most people that you have remember that April 15th is actually the day that we're filing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it gets a little later. Depends when the 15th falls, like on a Friday or a Saturday, and then you have to the following Monday. But it is tomorrow. And if you can't file your tax returns by the end of day tomorrow, there are ways to file for an extension.
I'm thinking about cheating this year just because I don't think there's anybody working at the IRS anymore, so I like my chances. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't think I can condone you cheating, John, but I do agree that I'm not sure who's out there processing returns or making sure that everybody is toeing the line. I do have some concerns, actually, about how quickly we will get those tax returns processed with thousands and thousands of people let go, or at least home on administrative leave, waiting to find out if they're filed. It's going to delay some things.
I just don't understand the vilification of the people that work at the IRS. They're not criminals. They didn't do anything wrong. They have a job, and they work for the Internal Revenue Service. And ultimately, that service is there to collect the taxes that we all owe. And I always say, if you haven't done anything wrong, I like your chances. And a lot of people do cheat or do something wrong, and we ought to get the money. It would pay for itself if you had more people out there getting the money that we're all owed.
I agree completely. I don't understand the idea that you're going to cut the IRS unless you don't want people to file their tax returns, in which case I'm not quite sure how the government is going to be funded, because this is how it happens, folks. We pay our taxes, the government works. So anyway, let's just assume we're all going to file our taxes. I've filed mine. I'm sure you've filed yours or about to. And if you can't file, it's easy to go to irs.gov and file Form 4868. That is the application for automatic extension of time to file your return. Everybody gets granted this extension. You file for it, you get it. However, you do need to pay any estimated taxes that
right.
you owe.
Right.
And that's the kicker, because if you don't, you get charged like 7%, and every day that compounds.
So I'm glad you said that, because that was my belief, that you still owe on the 15th, even if you can't get all the paperwork done, you're missing a form. So make a best faith effort payment, and then finish filing after the 15th. Am I right?
That's correct. And there's actually a link on the IRS.gov website. You can make an electronic payment using direct pay, a debit card, a credit card, or a digital wallet. When you make that payment, you want to indicate that the payment is for an extension, and then you file your extension separately, and that's how they tie the two things together.
We're talking to Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch. She's from Think Glink Media. 81% of the folks selling their homes this spring think they're going to get what they asked, maybe even more. I wonder how that compares, or what's your spin or interpretation of that?
Well, it's interesting, John. You know, people are usually very optimistic about real estate in the spring, and here we are. April is sort of the official beginning, although, you know, I say January 2nd is the official beginning in a normal year, but we haven't had a normal year in a few years. So typically the spring market, April, May, June, even July, these are the strongest markets, the strongest months for sales. And if you look across the year, you see it bump up slightly, and then it kind of is the same the rest of the year. But the optimism that sellers are showing right now is extraordinary. And some of the reasons that they gave to Realtor.com, which is different from the National Association of Realtors, by the way, but the reasons that they gave are, you know, high demand, low inventory. They see property values rising. They're looking around. They don't see many homes on the market where they live. So they're thinking, well, if somebody wants to buy, they're going to really make an offer. And they look on places like Zillow or Realtor.com, and they see that prices are really rising dramatically in their neighborhood. So that just primes them for thinking they should get more money. It's been a very optimistic cycle for sellers. And of course, the reverse is true for buyers, who are worried about the fact that they can't afford very much. Interest rates have stayed high, and there's not very many homes to buy.
Well, explain that, because every seller becomes a buyer. So if you think you can get more money for your house, the house you're going to buy, that guy's thinking the same thing too. It's the only way you can get ahead in this, it would seem to me, at least, is if you're radically downsizing.
Well, or you're trading locations. So we've had a lot of outflow, outflow in the state. Same thing in California, where prices are sky high. A lot of people have moved to Texas, or South Carolina, North Carolina, Minnesota, less expensive places. And Chicago's pretty reasonably priced. But even in the metro area, there are places where you can get more house for the money, sometimes a lot more. And there are people who also, they don't end up buying something new. They end up renting. And so there's a lot of differences in, you know, the reasons why, you know, people are getting out, of course. Some of it has to do with, like, school districts, for example. You know, people who live in the city might want to move to a different school district, or if your kids are graduating and you want to get back into where the restaurants are and, you know, all the cultural stuff that Chicago offers, and you want to get back into the city, you'll sell out in a suburb and move downtown. So there's just a lot of different ways to, I'm going to say monetize, but do a little better when you sell. And so sellers are very optimistic.
Well, I appreciate your analysis of that. And so the chart you shared with Pete says looking for a different community is the number one reason people are considering selling, looking for a different community. And it may be what you spoke about first. That is, the further you get away from downtown Chicago, the less expensive eventually the property becomes. You know, if you land in Hinsdale, not so much, but if you get out past Minooka, you know, where I spent a lot of years, or Ottawa, you can get more house for your dollar out there. If you have the luxury, right, of being able to do that, cash in on your house in the suburbs and go to the exurbs. I suppose that would be, although ultimately I guess that'll push the price up out there, but the math would be in your favor if you're going further west.
West or way north, south, there's a lot of value to be found south in the Chicago metropolitan area, southwest. You know, the only thing you can't do is move into a houseboat on the lake, although I'm sure somebody else has figured that out too. But, you know, there are, if you want to stay in Chicago, there are definitely places that have great school districts, are more affordable than others. Now, if you're retiring and you want to move to kids, where your kids live and they live in outside the state, or you decide you want to move down to Florida because you've got a friend pod there that's moved, or you decide you want to go skiing all the time, you're going to move out west to the mountains. Then you're going to really look for a different community and a different state. And so you're going to leave the state of Illinois and go off there. But, you know, when you look at the reasons for selling, looking for a different community is number one. But to make a profit, 36% of people are looking to make a profit.
Yeah, that's number two. And go down to just a couple more bars. 21% say that the reason they are considering selling is because potential buyers have reached out to them. Wow, you're just sitting there and somebody goes, hey, anytime soon? I wonder how, do they put a note on your door? That used to happen sometimes. I wonder if that's actually going on.
Well, I've actually gotten letters from people in the last couple of months asking, you know, dear owner, we want to make your community our forever community. Would you consider selling to us? Name your price. That's, you know, for a lot of people, that's pretty awesome. Now, if you could see all the stuff I have in my house, you'd know there is no price that you could pay me to get me to take on the packing and the throwing out and the moving. But I am not probably like everybody else. And so there's definitely, I'm not a hoarder, John, don't get worried, but I do have a, you know, 30 years worth of things that I have to go through, which is how long I've lived in this current house. But, you know, for a lot of people, getting a letter like that is the impetus to make the decision to start clearing things out.
Sure, I'll buy a tent. Let's go. You want the $14 million. Although you did a quick survey of the Chicago Metro. Here is a survey of the Chicago Metro in terms of the number of homes available for sale. Start with Glencoe.
Glencoe has all of 10 homes for sale and two lots. I mean, this is, you and I have talked about Glencoe from time to time, and the whole North Shore is kind of the same way, except the prices are a lot higher. The cheapest price for a lot, $1.2 million on the market right now. Mm-hmm. And there have been, there was a parcel of about 5 acres that was divided up, and almost all of those are gone. These are, there's a couple left. Evanston, 73 homes for sale. I mean, given how big Evanston is, not a lot. Oak Park, only 76 homes for sale. Vernon Hills, 30 homes and condos for sale. Palos Hills down in the south, 40 homes for sale. Now, the city of Chicago is interesting, John, and anybody can do this. You just go to Zillow.com and type in homes for sale, city of Chicago. And what popped up was like a scattergram. So there's 5,600 homes for sale. There are almost none anywhere from Edgewater all the way down to Hyde Park. I mean, like, we're talking like 10. There's a bunch that are in the west near Oak Park, just east of the border, and there's a whole bunch south, going all the way south.
Yeah.
But I was shocked to see that.
That's such, I'm looking at that graph. Yeah, it's weird. South suburbs, you're solid. Northwest, you can find a place. All the prime real estate along the lakefront out to, how far out are we going here? But anyway, in the city, forget about it. It's slim pickings.
It is, and that actually goes all the way up past Lake Forest, all the way, I mean, you're almost to the Wisconsin border. There's just not a lot of homes for sale anywhere. And Chicago has more than many of the other cities in the country. We are just so short. People are hanging on to their homes, and they're bidding up prices, you know, for homes they can get their hands on. It's kind of crazy. There was a home in Winnetka that we know, that I know about personally. It sold a few weeks ago. They had 17 offers in 24 hours.
And really, if you go down I-55 to Stevenson all the way to 294, that corridor is just about zero, just a few houses for sale. Elise Glink's got it all at thinkglink.com. Okay, we'll talk next week. Thank you, Elise.
You bet, John.
Tyler Lowell is on the line, the managing partner of Chicago-based CA Fortune. There is a Shark Tank-style event coming up, and these are the people putting it on. Thanks for joining us, Tyler. You're on WGN. How are you?
I am well, John. It's great to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, likewise. Tell me what CA Fortune is. What do you all do?
Yeah, absolutely. So CA Fortune is a national consumer brands sales and marketing agency, specifically playing a big role in the consumer packaged goods industry, with a real heavy focus. Food and beverage is a big part of our portfolio, but it spans all across different consumer brands. We're based in Chicago, as you mentioned, John, but have offices all across the country. And in its very simplest form, our responsibility, we're hired to kind of help bring consumer brands to market, right, at their very early stage or once they are in market to kind of help scale them. And we have a variety of different verticals from sales, marketing, and many others to kind of help accomplish that goal.
Are you doing the money or just the strategy on how to spend the money and make the product?
So great question. So the money side of it is, from as far as actual capital needs, we don't engage in that within CA today. We do have many kind of advisors or capital partners that we can work with to help those brands, which many of them need, because of the way our portfolio really breaks out, regardless of services. We've got brands in the very early stage that are literally just trying to get into market, many that are in the mid-cap, right? And then also many that are in the, I would call it more like a multi-billion dollar category leadership position. So depending on where you're at, is to kind of, obviously the capital needs are very different, but really our responsibility, again, is to kind of help connect them through our brokerage services to the specific retailers to get them on shelf, whether it's a physical shelf, like a Jewel in the Chicago market, let's just stay in our hometown for a second, or on an e-commerce platform like an Amazon. And again, there's a variety of other areas.
I was looking for my favorite box of cereal over the weekend, and it wasn't at eye level. And I'm going back and forth, and if I had to bend over, I thought, this is a lot of work. And I was reminded that the placement in a grocery store, the end cap, the height, those sorts of things, I've been told is more critical than maybe we appreciate. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, I sure would. John, now you're really talking our language here. So one of those verticals that we would help a brand, again, try to accelerate the brand when in market, is our overall kind of what we call our business intelligence side of the business, which their responsibility is going to be to look at a given planogram. And what a planogram means is you take a certain set in the grocery store. So let's use your example, the cereal aisle. That's an aisle that you can get lost in very quickly. Our business intelligence team would kind of come in, work with our client, the brand, to kind of help identify why we have a reason to believe to be that eye level on shelf. And then what we're going to do is work with our team at the corporate headquarters for that given retailer. So we'll, again, stick with the Jewel here. Our Chicago-based retailer, our team that's actually calling in the headquarters to try to help communicate that message.
Right.
And then what we'll do is we'll bring it full stream with our in-store execution team, the people that are running around hitting those 185 stores around the Chicago market to ensure the execution is where it needs to be.
Yeah. And then you got to go to all those stores and see if, in fact, it's working. Let's not dwell on this point. I want to talk about your upcoming event, but I had long been under the assumption that the manufacturer of that cereal or that tomato sauce, whatever it is, was themselves advocating for their placement in a store, but they might hire an agency like you. You do that for them, huh?
That's exactly right, John. So are there circumstances where a brand would go direct, as we would say? Absolutely. But I would tell you that it's a far, far more common scenario where they're hiring an outsourced sales and marketing agency like CA Fortune to be able to accomplish that goal. And so then what we're going to do is we're going to do two major things, right? We're going to drive down costs because we obviously can provide economies of scale. And then we're going to add value specifically on, let's use the example of kind of getting product into store, is we're going to obviously have all those different relationships across the country, not just Jewel, right? Whether it's Whole Foods down in Austin or Costco or on the East Coast as it relates to a Publix, regardless of the spot, that's really where we're going to kind of help drive that.
So you have this build event on Thursday the 24th. So in 10 days, you're going to do a build event where people make their pitches to the stores. Just talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, John, this was born out of we bought Build about 7 years ago. And what it was is it was an emerging brands sales accelerator. And so what that means is, someone that's not as familiar with the industry, It is a business unit we have within Total CA that's hyper-focused against brands that are literally just kind of getting started. They could literally be making granola in their garage. Yes, I know, I say that tongue-in-cheek, but trying to figure out, how in the world do I take this thing to market? So they're going to engage with this part of our business called Build, right? That word, that brand is very intentional for us. And what we're going to do with this kind of like SEAL Team 6 approach is identify the right different retailer partners across the country that make sense, given those retailers are really behind innovation and a lot of early stage companies. So the event that we host next Thursday, it's now our fourth year doing it. And it was, again, I'll say, born out of certainly Shark Tank, which has kind of taken on a life of its own. We were the first to kind of jump into this in the overall kind of food and beverage specific space. What we have seven different retailers. Well, actually, we fly into Chicago, and everybody from the Kroger's of the world to Whole Foods to Sprouts to Albertsons, to a variety of others, they will be the actual judges. And we have 8 brands, our clients, that will be have their opportunity, have their moment to kind of pitch them to these retailers seeking to try to get their product on shelf.
So these are people that aren't on the shelves yet, but would love to be. What a great opportunity this is for both sides. Give me an example of some of the people that will be making the pitches. Who's going to pitch what?
Yeah, okay, so Anihana, which is more of a health and beauty type of product. So again, our portfolio spans not just food and bev, but it really touches the entire consumer landscape. So Anihana, Deutsch Foods, which is a really cool cookie dough innovation you got to check out. Upic, which is a trail mix product. Frito Gelato, which is obviously in the gelato category. Bear Maple Foods, which is a functional beverage. Torres, which is the chips. And then lastly is Headlock Sauce, which is a really unique kind of a hot sauce innovation. So it kind of spans the gamut, but again, they'll get up there, and what they're responsible to do is try to deliver their pitch, and what we'll do is, at the end of it, right, taste is always king. So in the food and beverage space, taste still kind of trumps all, but there'll be a winner for best overall, there'll be a best pitch, there'll be a best product, and a best packaging, and that's, again, voted on those retailers, which is Kroger, Meijer, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and several other ones as well.
Got it. I'm out of time now, but then that doesn't necessarily translate to product placement, does it, or does it?
So what it would do is the idea is, and it has three times over, hoping for the fourth, is oftentimes there's a walk out of there where then we will gain placement, and then we'll use our marketing teams to kind of drive home the pull off the shelf, if you will.
That's fascinating. I'm really intrigued. Maybe we should connect with you after the fact and hear who won, Tyler. Let's have another conversation like this soon.
We'd love to do that. John, thanks for the time again today.
Tyler Lowell is the managing partner of Chicago-based CA Fortune, and that event is coming up on the 24th. All right, more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The CEO of United Airlines saw his compensation double last year from $18.6 million to $33.9 million. Cranes reports Scott Kirby moves into an elite category of Chicago executives who are paid more than $30 million a year. Motorola's CEO is also in that group. The report says Motorola and United were two of the top-performing local stocks last year. The pay bump for Kirby is designed to keep him at United for the foreseeable future. One part of the package is a retention bonus that will vest over 3 years. Chicago's O'Hare Airport has been ranked second busiest airport in the world for aircraft movements and 8th busiest in the world for passengers. That's according to Airports Council International. O'Hare handled 776,036 aircraft movements in 2024, just behind Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. That's a 7.7% increase in aircraft operations over 2023. O'Hare also processed more than 80 million passengers last year, an 8.3% increase over 2023. It was the largest year-over-year percentage gain of any airport in the Americas, according to ACI's rankings. O'Hare beat out Shanghai and New Delhi in the top 10 passenger rankings. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now the business of food, and now Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And on the food calendar, yesterday was National Peach Day, but today we are talking pears. And if you like pears, there's peril.
Yes.
There aren't as many, and they're more expensive.
We had some very cold weather that did some damage to buds and developing fruit that resulted in a 31% decrease below the 5-year average.
More about the pear problem after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. It's always a good time to eat pears, and chances are the ones you see in the store are from the Pacific Northwest.
Washington State's the number one state for pear production in the U.S.
John Devaney is president of the Washington State Tree Fruit Association.
Apples, pears, and cherries here in Washington State.
That's a huge part of the Evergreen State's economy.
Whereas in the Midwest, corn and soybeans are the big ones for you guys. In Washington State, apples, pears, and cherries are our biggest crop out here.
Apples are number one by a mile.
But the pear crop is pretty significant, with over $1.5 billion in economic impact.
And just like corn and soybeans, pears are dependent on the weather.
We have had more unpredictable weather patterns recently in the Pacific Northwest that resulted in both fewer total number of fruits growing on the tree and some cosmetic damage to some of the pears. So there was a lot of producers who had a lot less fruit and some that was just not economic to harvest.
And you know that tune, lower supply, higher prices.
Yes, but not enough to offset the losses to growers. So it's important to recognize that even with crop insurance, when we have these kind of weather events, they really do affect producers pretty significantly.
And
the bigger concern for a lot of our growers is how many competing products there are in maintaining shelf space.
Yeah, the out of sight, out of mind, and out of mouth thing.
Will consumers remember to come back and buy the product again when it's available? Will retailers remember to include you in their marketing and promotion plans for the next year?
And on top of all that, tariffs.
Yes, about a third of our apples and pears are exported.
Yeah, lots of peril in the pear industry. On the food calendar, oh, I know you can't wait to get out there and get dirty. It's National Gardening Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Tim O'Malley's here, the CEO of Atima. You're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us on the Business Lunch. Tim, how are you?
John Williams, thanks so much for having me. I'm great.
Let's talk a little bit about the Hospitality, Tourism, and Events Conference that's coming up. What's this event?
So it's a basically it's a premier event for the hospitality, tourism, and events industries in Chicago. We do have some folks that aren't in the industry that come to the event as well. But basically, it's a trade show. It's educational sessions, roundtable discussions, as well as the first ever Summit Excellence Awards. And I got to highlight those roundtable discussions are extra important this year as we all try to figure out, you know, what the market uncertainty means for tourism, especially international tourism here in Chicago.
Yeah, no kidding. And this all kicks off tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow it is, yes, sir.
How many folks will be coming into Chicago for this, or businesses? Just give me some numbers.
So we'll have about 1,200 in attendance. Businesses that attend range from really, John, anyone who, any type of business that wants to get more tourists or more private events. Those are the folks that primarily in the hospitality industry that come and exhibit. And the people that come and attend are generally folks that want to connect with those people at the exhibitors, or want to connect with other people to build relationships, you know, share ideas, learn, et cetera.
So if I'm a travel agency, or maybe I'm going to host a convention of some sort, I need to know who's on the other end of that, right?
Absolutely. If you're looking to host a convention or an event, you can come to our summit and you can see a lot of venues where you could hold an event. You can event services companies like AV,
right.
Companies like AV Chicago's there with a few others. Blue Plate Catering is probably a catering company you've heard of. They'll be there. Really, even things like, tchotchkes and so forth that you need for an event like that, you'll see someone doing that as well. So really anything you need on that side. And then from the tourism standpoint, if you're looking to get more tourists, you can come and you'll see people, a concierge and guest services folks from hotels. You'll see, hotel salespeople. You'll see a corporate concierge. You'll see social media influencers. We'll probably have 35 or 40 social media influencers there.
That's interesting.
Travel media.
Let me ask you this question.
Yep.
Is it possible to know what the headwinds or the environment is going to be in the next 12 months or so?
John, if I could answer that question, I don't know if I'd be talking to you right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because, Choose Chicago, who, as you know, is the marketing arm for Chicago's tourism and conventions industry. They're seeing some statistics that they got from Statistics Canada. Like, this is a good example of what's happening. The number of Canadians returning from the U.S. to Canada by car in February fell by like 23% from last year and fell by air travel by 13%. That was February. We're expecting it to be worse in March. So that's a current, directional piece of data that gives you an idea. Who knows, depending on, how everything that's going on in D.C. settles down and when, that's going to have a lot to do with, how it affects travel here in Chicago. But you'll see, and if you're in the industry or if you're interested and you're reading about it, you'll see there was an article in the Tribune recently about it. there's articles all over because people are really trying to figure that out.
Understood.
In Chicago, the one positive thing is, you know, we've seen in the past, like during COVID, for example, when international travel was down significantly, what we see is, as being in the middle of the country, we have a great drive market. So we have people coming from all over the country, and we're expecting to see more of that this year.
Tim O'Malley is the CEO at Ateema, A-T-E-E-M-A, Ateema.com. Well, it'd be interesting to hear what the word on the street is that you hear back from this conference. Let's connect again, Tim. We're out of time today, but have a good conference.
That's great. Can I give you a website for anyone who's interested in learning more?
Go.
Okay, it's www.thesummitchicago.com. Thanks so much, John. Much appreciated.